Hi, this is Alan Chartok in the Congressional Corner with our great David Hawkins, who is one of the smartest people I know about congressional politics. He, for years, has run some of the most important publications, including Roll Call and CQ. And now, here he is with us, as he has always been, sharing his knowledge. Okay, David, welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be back.
Okay, so let's start with lawmakers heading back to D.C. after the summer recess. What are they going to be working on for the rest of the year with a presidential and congressional election coming up? I suspect it'll be very little.
It will be very little, but they'll spend plenty of time doing it. They
right.
have the topic A, at least as we're speaking right now, is going to be the Democratic House, at least, insists that they will move some more gun control legislation that will get lots of airtime.
And it will embarrass right, David. And it will embarrass the senators who don't want to deal with this at all.
That's true. It will embarrass them. And as we're speaking now, what Mitch McConnell is signaling, and he's changed his signaling a lot, is that he is not going to do anything in the Senate unless and until President Trump makes up his mind about which of various different things he's talked about and then untalked about, trial balloons he's floated and then popped and then said he never floated. McConnell says, I'm going to wait for the president. If what the president tells me he will sign for sure is what I'll put before the Senate. And that's all I'll put before the Senate, because I don't want to waste, this isn't McConnell talking, I don't want to waste, quote unquote, waste senators' time talking about legislation that's not going to become law. So what is that? Is that McConnell passing the buck to Trump, or is that McConnell quietly trying to put a little bit of pressure on the president to make up his mind once and for all about what, if anything, he'll support?
Now, McConnell is worth talking about. The last time I looked at his numbers, David Hawkins, he was hovering around 33% and going down. Can a guy who's got a 33% approval rating in Kentucky, can he win again?
He can if he has an opponent who has an even lower approval rating. I don't know. So we know who his opponent is very, very likely to be. Her name is Amy McGrath. She's a former fighter, military pilot. She took on a Republican congressman from the Lexington area of Kentucky last time. It was a very, very expensive race, one of the hottest races in the country. Everybody thought she was the absolute peak of the kind of centrist Democratic female candidate that should have won, and who did win. And several of them, dozens of them, run around the country. Anyway, she did not win. She lost to this guy named Andy Barr. And so her consolation prize is to try and take on McConnell. She's had a rough start. She, within the first day of her candidacy, did a double flip-flop on the question of Brett Kavanaugh. Initially, she said she would not have voted for Brett Kavanaugh to be on the Supreme Court. Then she said, well, I might have, because he was certainly well qualified. And then there was so much of a hue and cry instantaneously among Democrats that she changed her mind again, said, no, I wouldn't have voted for the guy. So this is not a good way to start a Senate campaign. So if you're at 33% and you're running against somebody weak, you can win.
So tell me, because you are so smart, what is it that McConnell does? I mean, look, his guys don't want to vote on gun control, right? They don't want to vote on it because they'll lose somebody either way. People are dying all over the country. So it's McConnell's job. Am I wrong about this? To protect them by not bringing it up for a vote no matter what.
I think you are exactly right. I think this is somewhat of a misunderstanding of McConnell. McConnell is sort of portrayed in a lot of the press and to the public as this sort of unilateral dictator of what the Senate is going to do. I don't see it that way. I see McConnell as, and McConnell's success, political success, success among fellow Republicans. He's now the longest serving Senate Republican leader ever, longer than Bob Dole. And he has succeeded in that role by understanding what his folks want and giving it to them. And if what they want is for him to be the tip of the spear and take the brickbats and the criticism for not moving some contentious legislation, that's what he'll do. That's why, you know, his folks were behind him when he decided to not act on Merrick Garland for the Supreme Court in 2016. His folks have been behind him in saying we don't want to vote on this comprehensive democracy reform package, which I pay a lot of attention to now as the editor of the Fulcrum, which pays nothing attention to nothing but democracy reform. And his, I think you're right that his folks, most Republicans, will be behind him in not wanting to do gun control unless it's a smooth and simple and straightforward thing. So if the Republicans change their mind, if a critical mass of Senate Republicans want to do something that isn't McConnell's idea of a good idea, he'll give them what they want. He's pretty non-ideological, actually. He'll make deals when that's what Republicans want, and he'll throw up roadblocks when that's what the other Republicans want.
I really respect the fact that you brought up the Fulcrum, which is a news outlet focused on reversing dysfunction in American government. So do people care about the dysfunction?
Yeah, they say they do. There is lots of polling in which people say that increasingly they care about the dysfunction. They care. They wish that it was getting more attention in the presidential campaign. You know, so far it hasn't gotten nearly as much attention in the debates as lots of other topics. You know, one could argue that that's because the debate moderators, at least in the first two rounds of debates, have been trying to find areas where the Democratic candidates disagree, i.e. Medicare for all or not quite for all. Immigration, they have some disagreements on. Foreign policy, they have some disagreements on. On the questions of democracy reform, you know, reducing the influence of money in politics, reducing the influence of politicians over drawing political maps, increasing access to the polls, restoring voter rights. The Democrats are largely on the same page on these issues. A few of them have had some sort of outlier ideas, but largely they're on the same page. So in a debate, it doesn't make for good TV to have them all agree on the same thing.
Right. So let me go to a different place right now, and that is the debates. We'll have another debate now, another Democratic debate. But increasingly, it looks like everybody kept saying it's too early. Now they're beginning to say it's too late. It looks like Joe Biden's going to be the candidate.
Oh, I don't think. I mean, he certainly has maintained his decent altitude, you know, for this and for all this time. The conventional wisdom was that he got into the race relatively late among the 23 or 24 of them who were running. He was one of the last to get in. That he knew that he was getting in at peak altitude and that he had nowhere to go but down because he got in at about 37-38% support. Now he's down, I think, in the polling averages to the low 30s, but still comfortably ahead of anybody else. You know, can he maintain that altitude all the way to the end? I think it is not too late for the others to make a move. I think Joe Biden has... you know, the rationale for his candidacy remains strong, if not dramatic, which is essentially, you know, I'm the normal guy. I'm the guy who can bring normalcy back to Washington and restore some functionality to the government and restore some integrity to the process and look like a president and act like a president in a way, you know, and be the sharpest competency contrast to Donald Trump that there is. Is that enough? Is that what the Democrats are going to be willing to settle for? I think it's still an open question, remembering that the next two people nipping at his heels are both the leaders of the progressive wing. If you put those two sets of votes together, they would wash Biden away.
But they're not together.
Bernie Sanders, but they're not together. They're not. So meanwhile, so the progressives are splitting their vote, and Biden is I won't say gliding along because it's bulky for him. He said some goofy stuff. He's been up to his old rhetorical faux pas tricks. So, you know, if the progressives coalesce around, you know, if Bernie somehow pulls ahead or Warren somehow pulls ahead and the other one drops away, I think Biden could still be in trouble. And I think there is time for that dynamic to develop.
Well, David Hawkins, we love talking to you. You're so smart. I so appreciate your being with us. When we come back the next time, I want to talk about the squad.
Let's do it.